So happy, happy Sunday morning here in the Twin Cities. As I look out my window, it looks like it's threatening weather today, perhaps threatening some rain. It occurs to me we don't say it's threatening sun. I wonder why we attach such a word to rainfall, but we do. It's good to see everyone, and I want to talk this morning about, I'm going to use the kind of our collective shared experience of the pandemic, the lockdown, as kind of my jumping off point. That's kind of the jumping off point, I think, for everybody these days and pretty much everything, part of our collective experience. And I'm going to call my talk this morning, Everything is a Mirror. And I hope that makes sense to you by the end. If you don't have time to listen to the whole talk today, the short version is you have everything you need. So if you want to take off now, you can. If you want to stick around and hear me say more about that over the next half hour, 45 minutes, then you certainly can. But you got everything you need. That's the short version. So where I want to start is a place I know a lot of us have already been in our minds. We've already seen something kind of remarkable in the past number of months that we've watched the increase spread of this virus over the course of our planet, and we've watched our culture change and our habits change. Is I'm sure it's dawned on you the way it's dawned on me that this experience that we're having called the pandemic is really a mirror that are showing us things that have always actually been here. And on one level, of course, we're having a very new experience that none of us have had before. And that's obviously true in a lot of ways. But in other ways, what we're seeing now, either in kind of stark relief or at least in a new way, is many, many things about ourselves and about our cultures that have always been present. And I think everything that we are experiencing now was here a year ago. The greed, creativity, injustices, the compassion. But we've now had a particular mirror called pandemic held up in front of our collective faces, held up to ourselves. And so we're seeing ourselves, I think, I like to think more deeply. And as Zen practitioners, we know everything is a mirror. We're always taught that. Everything is a mirror. All we ever experience is actually us. And for those of us who have done formal or at least semi-formal retreats in a Zen center of some kind, we know the tradition in Soto Zen when we sit Zazen is to face the wall. And for most of us, that's pretty weird at first. It takes a little getting used to. After a while, it's the new normal. It doesn't strike us as odd. And we all know who have done this that after a very short amount of time, the wall becomes a mirror. There isn't really anything there other than ourselves. And we humans attribute qualities to things and to people and to the world that we ourselves actually possess. And when we do this with objects and animals, we usually call it like anthropomorphizing, to attribute a human quality to a thing or to an animal. When we do it with other people, we tend to call it projection, but we kind of get what we're talking about, that we take something that's us and we push it out and we imagine that it exists in the world. Yogi Bhajan, who is not a Zen practitioner, there's a certain amount of overlap between the yogic traditions and Buddhist traditions. There's also a lot of places where they differ, but he said something that I think encapsulates this wonderfully. Yogi Bhajan said, if you are willing to look at another person's behavior toward you as a reflection of the state of their relationship with themselves, rather than a statement about your value as a person, then you will, over a period of time, cease to react at all. What this person is saying to you is about them. What they're seeing in you is something that they themselves possess. Rumi, my friend Rumi, our friend Rumi, says it this way. This is a subtle truth. Whatever you love, you are. Pretty cool. So a more simple example, kind of an everyday example of this, might be the statement, that's a warm blanket. We're in the season now of this kind of spring in Minnesota is a season of lots of change where, you know, it's bordering on 80 one day and then, what was it, like 2 weeks ago we had snow or something? So anyway, I found myself reaching for the blanket on the left, that's the white puffy one, instead of the blanket on the right, that's the darker, thinner one, because it's warmer. And as I was kind of putting it over my legs, it dawned on me, blankets aren't warm. Blankets have no intrinsic or abiding temperature qualities at all. A blanket is the same temperature as the air that surrounds it, and blankets simply hold and reflect back to us what we already radiate, right? We all know this. So if I was not already radiating warmth, the blanket couldn't hold it and it couldn't reflect it back. So when I said, that's a warm blanket, what I actually meant was that fabric slows my heat loss pretty efficiently and I experience more warmth when I'm wrapped in it. Right? That's a warm blanket really means I'm a warm person. So when we go to a blanket to warm us, it's our own warmth that we're seeking. The warmth must already be there. The warmth must already be ours. Zazen is like a blanket. It has no intrinsic or abiding qualities at all. And it can only hold and reflect back to us what we already radiate, what we already are. As humans, we tend to go to others for the love that we crave within ourselves. We go to the world for the acceptance that we can really only give ourselves. We go to the Buddha for an example of the enlightenment that we already are. Suzuki Roshi said it this way, it is wisdom which is seeking wisdom. So when we go to Zazen to awaken us, it is our own awakening that we are seeking. The awakening must already be there. It must already be ours. When we go to Zazen for refuge or for comfort, which a lot of us do during times like this, as well we should, it is our own refuge, our own comfort that we're seeking. Our own comfort and refuge must already be there in order for us to find it. Our teachers do this reflecting for us all the time. Because they know that humans look outside of themselves, what they already have all the time. We go to our teachers for comfort or for wisdom, and they remind us of our own comfort. They remind us of our own wisdom. They tell us doctors won't make you healthy. Nutritionists won't make you slim. Teachers won't make you smart. Gurus won't make you calm. Mentors won't make you rich. Trainers won't make you fit. You get the thing here. Ultimately, we have to take responsibility, save ourselves. And we all know this. This is not a new idea. As Buddhists especially, we know this because Buddha's last words on this earth are said to be a light unto yourself. So this is a basic truth of Buddhism, the truth that suffering is an internal condition that we imagine has external causes, and that this delusion itself creates more suffering for us. And another basic truth of Buddhism is that our natural tendency to anthropomorphize and project is not only delusion, but it fosters dependence on externals. And those externals are unreliable and impermanent. And so if we don't take back those projections, we will always be externally focused and we will always be dependent. Buddha says we will always be unsatisfied because those externals are going, gone. They're impermanent, right? Just like we are. hence the fourth of the five remembrances. All that is dear to me and everyone I love is of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. But when you recognize that it's actually you that you're seeking, the game changes entirely, right? Hence the fifth and the final of the five remembrances. My actions are my only true belongings. I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. My actions are the ground upon which I stand. Our Zazen does not invent or create awakening that isn't already present any more than a blanket invents or creates warmth that isn't already present. Zazen does not generate enlightenment. Zazen does not create enlightenment. And doing Zazen does not make you wise or kind or calm or safe or enlightened or special or cool or good. Zazen doesn't make you anything that you aren't. Dogen was adamant on this point, as all of our subsequent ancestors have been. Zazen is just one way of allowing already existent enlightenment to be expressed. It is ritual enactment of our fundamental enlightenment. I follow NASA on Twitter, and they tweeted a couple weeks ago, the elements hydrogen, helium, and nitrogen were all formed in the stars. The elements hydrogen, helium, and nitrogen also help make up our bodies. The next time you gaze out at the night sky, remember, you are literally stardust. So here we are. Many of us, especially earlier on in Buddhist practice, in Zen practice, we tend to reach out for the light. We tend to strain for enlightenment. We attribute our own qualities of wakefulness to an imaginary future state of consciousness, enlightenment, and then we grasp after it. In Rinzai Zen, Dharma siblings in the Zen world, there's the saying, sit like your head is on fire, which is just a great saying. Sit like your head is on fire is oftentimes understood to be a simple kind of admonition to practice with fervor, right? Because life is short. And it does work that way. It's a great saying to express that type of spirit. It's also a really kind of dramatic image. It would really be like super cool in a movie. But sit like your head is on fire might also be taken as a nice way of talking about the same thing. It's your fire. It's your light already. So just sit like that. The fire of enlightenment is here. It's yours. In art, we give halos to people that we imagine to be holy and awakened, right? Enlightened, right? A nice little circle of gold or light or fire around their heads to sort of symbolize their awakeness, their enlightenment. We paint them with their heads on fire in a kind of gentle, sort of nice way, right? That's our projection. We give it away to them. My question is, if you sat Zazen like you already had the halo, how would it change your sitting? So we all want to arrive. I know I do. We want to go all the way to enlightenment. I want to go all the way. I want to go all the way. All the way, but all the way, all the way. Can you feel the kind of grasping? Can you feel the grasping in that? Can you feel sort of the subtle dissatisfaction with this in that? Can you feel sort of that subtle energy of this isn't it? This isn't enough. It must be later. It must be other. It must be elsewhere. Can you feel the straining in it? I want to go all the way. It's beautiful, actually, I think, as an expression of our aspiration. I think that's beautiful. As an expression of our spirit and practice, it sounds like almost like a variation on the Bodhisattva vow in a way, right? And the Bodhisattva vows are beautiful. But you can kind of feel there isn't something quite right about that. There isn't something quite right about it because it's the same thing as attributing the warmth to the blanket. When the goal is merely to finish, it's logical to assume that the longer the race, the more formidable it will be, right? That kind of makes sense. But this is Zen. And all the way suggests that there's going to be more later than there is now. All the way also suggests that it's possible perhaps to fail. And neither of those things are true. There isn't more later than there is now. Nor is there a future to achieve a goal in. Nor is there a possibility of either success or of failure. All moments are in this moment. Only this. Only now. Which also means words like now and this are kind of meaningless since there's nothing with which to compare them or contrast them. All we can meet is what arises now. So meeting what's here, as it is complete effort. It's the starting line and the finish line. That is the all the way. Because there is nothing else showing itself. There is nothing else apart from what is here. There is no gap in reality. So to meet now completely as it is to perfectly meet all the way. That's our practice enlightenment. That's the mark we can't miss. That is us knowing that the warmth we feel is ours, not the blanket's. And yet, nevertheless, thanking the blanket for its help. What I hope is that you've seen in your pandemic mirror something important about your culture, but what I also hope, and I hope this much more deeply, is that what you've seen in your pandemic mirror has caused you to see yourself more deeply, feel more deeply. I hope your pandemic mirror has broken your heart, and I hope that it's helped your heart heal over and over again, maybe daily. I hope that what you've seen in your pandemic mirror is something that you can look back on someday without regret, knowing that you met the world as it is the best that you could, and that that's complete effort, and that you met what was there with an upright mind and an open heart. If you have seen in your pandemic mirror greed, fear, and injustice, I hope you've owned it in yourself. And I hope you've looked for its cause there. And I hope you've tried to heal the suffering that gives rise to it there. If you've seen creativity in your mirror, resiliency, compassion, I hope you've also owned it in yourself. And you've appreciated its flowering there. My invitation is to make your Zazen a critical part of your pandemic experience. It looks like we're going to be in at least some variation of limited access to our normal social stuff for the next few months, and some at least half lockdown for a number of more months. This is a rare and precious opportunity, like every day is. It's occurred to me, it's occurred to a lot of people. We'll probably be telling stories about this the rest of our lives. You know, there'll be a lot about this that we actually miss. There'll be a lot that we're thrilled is over when it ends. There'll be a lot of joy. But while we're still here, just like when we're on retreat, right? Just like when we're in Sesshin, we know we're in a temporary container that has a huge amount of intensity to it. And we're quicker to watch our joy arise, our suffering arise, our resistance arise, our relaxation arise, right? Just like the pandemic, our Sesshin, our retreat practice, is designed to be a mirror. We never find anything there that wasn't ours to begin with. So we have just a few weeks left, a few months left in this collective retreat that we're all on. Please let Zazen be a critical part of that. Let it give you refuge and comfort when you need refuge and comfort. And let it expose you to deep truths about yourself and about the human experience that we all share. Let it do that. Say yes to this experience. Say yes to it as an ornament of Buddha, as something not separate from you. Right? Please let your Zazen be a mirror that shows you you. Let your Zazen show you your own completeness, your own enoughness. Plenty of room for improvement, but also perfect as you are. So, I think that's as much as I would like to say this morning, and I thank you for your attention. Let's see what we got here. I'm just wondering if people have got some comments or questions or